righty. You know, Mo and I just met for the first time the other day, and here I am abusing him already.
That's okay.
Well, I was told that. I was told you were to be one of my prime victims. That's why you're on the lineup.
That's what I signed up for. So.
That's right. Mo El-Ghazar in the College of Veterinary Medicine. He's for the birds, is what I heard. He's our poultry disease specialist over there. Actually, as we were talking the other day, kind of a interesting background, having been in industry and bounced around a couple of places. I caught him using a southern accent the other day, and we'll keep an eye. Those years in Georgia will do that to you, Mo. But what we wanted to talk about, and as Jeff and I set up the lineup for this year's Farm Science Review, you know, we both kind of said, hey, this bird flu thing, and I'm watching the egg markets, and I'm working with the retail guys on some of the poultry pricing and all that, right. And, you know, it's going crazy because you guys are having to kill birds left and right out in Iowa, out in Missouri, some of the other places that are heavy concentration, particularly on the layer side.
Right.
And the question becomes, okay, is this going to be apocalypse for the poultry industry in the U.S.? You know, what is bird flu? We get one every 6 weeks, it seems, a different strain, I guess. Or is it the same thing and you guys didn't get rid of it 2 years ago when you thought you did?
Well, influenza is a really very, changing virus all the time. And we have many, many different kinds of influenza. Some of them infect different species, especially influenza A. So some of them will infect birds, just birds, and we call that bird flu. Some of them will infect swine, equine, and even more recently dogs. So, but on rare occasions, these influenzas will start jumping species as well.
Right.
What happened with the birds, and even within the bird flu, we have many, many different kinds of influenza, and some of them will, generally, if we classified influenza in birds, we have two major divisions. One division that will make them really, really sick, and we call those the high path avian influenza viruses.
Okay.
And the other division would be they will make them sick, but they're not gonna wipe out the population, and these are what we call the low path avian influenza viruses. So we typically don't have the high avian influenza viruses in the United States. We had a few incidences in the history of the poultry industry here. One of the biggest ones were in 1983 back in Pennsylvania and some of Ohio poultry.
Right, right.
But recently, in 2015, we got one of those bad ones, the high path avian influenzas. And as you said, it hit the layer industry pretty bad, and that's the reason for the spikes in the prices we've been seeing. Hopefully, we don't see any more cases right now, so we think we have control of the outbreak. But also, we know it's out there in the migratory waterfowl, and this is where it came from.
Right.
So there is still a possibility of it coming back. Hopefully, that's not going to happen. But
you know, I think that's what people don't always think about, the fact that okay, it's in the birdhouses, so to speak, here, the layer houses. Well, you ought to be able to control it and confine it in there. That's not where it came from. And we talked the other day about the migratory flyways and how great of an effect that has on the distribution of these kinds of diseases, if you will. And certainly, you know, that path down along the Mississippi River, but frankly, that's Ohio also.
Yes.
We're kind of on the edge of that one.
Yeah, we are on the edge,
but
right.
Iowa wasn't, and they were number one in egg production.
Right.
They took that away from us a few years ago, and I think we're back in number one here in Ohio now.
Unfortunately, not for
wrong
good
way.
Reasons.
Wrong, yeah, don't like to see it that way, but there we are.
Yeah, so
I guess the next bit that I want to make sure we talked about, you said a minute ago that we hope we've got this thing under control now. But shouldn't we be looking to get rid of it rather than keep it under control,
right, right.
or
that's,
not?
That's what I meant. Maybe I misexpressed myself. by saying under control, I mean we have the outbreak stamped out, so we don't see more cases anymore.
But we haven't eliminated the bug.
We have eliminated the bug from the commercial poultry population, but not from the migratory waterfowl.
Okay.
And this is where the risk is.
Right.
We really don't have the tools or don't have the capacity to eliminate it from the migratory waterfowl. It is such a large population out of reach, and it's going to be...
Well, and math alone would tell you that it's just not going to happen.
But as far as commercial poultry population, turkeys, laying hens, broilers, and so on, we don't have it anymore. So in that respect, we did control it in the commercial poultry.
Well, it sounded to me like, though, McDonald's, when we were talking with Katie, McDonald's
right.
could be really in trouble as they're pushing for the free-range...
Right.
No cage type environment, and that's one of the things that we haven't talked as much about before, but the fact that we've got lots of people growing chickens in their backyard in Columbus or wherever now for the heck of it. You know, my 11-year-old nephew, I call the chicken tycoon of Missouri now because he's got his 20 layers and sells little old ladies' eggs, big businessman.
Right.
But, you know, they're inside part of the time. But they're out there, and if a duck comes flying over and brings some of this bug with them, and somebody pointed out to us the other day that ducks and geese like to fly over and leave their calling cards,
right?
That starts up with all these free range, including McDonald's chicken capacity there.
So we've definitely seen that social trend change towards more of natural foods, organic foods, local foods, and particularly the movement towards local food has sparked that
Absolutely.
Backyard population.
Absolutely.
And USDA had finished a study in four major U.S. cities, New York, Los Angeles, Denver, and one more city. I'm blanking on it right now. But they expect within the next 5 years, this population is going to quadruple.
Right.
So it's going to be four times more than it is right now. And that certainly represents some challenges when it comes to taking care of the health of those birds, making sure they are healthy, protected, but also they don't represent risk for the other poultry populations, including commercial poultry population. And we've seen that. We've seen some of that evidence in this current avian influenza outbreak. So as we talked the other day about the migratory flyaways, and the outbreak actually started on the western part of the North American continent, and it moved south towards the Washington, Oregon, California.
Right.
And the outbreak originally started in both backyard and captive birds, type birds, and it didn't really spread very much. But in looking at the outbreak, we think, you know, backyards and exposed to the elements, as you mentioned, would act as a gateway for entering or introducing those diseases to the population in the United States and North America.
Well, if you think about it, as you pointed out to me the other day, you know, a lot of these kinds of bugs develop in Asia.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we point to China a lot of places,
right.
and we've seen similar in hogs, but mostly in poultry. It gets in the population and it, you know, just festers, it grows. It's a fever. It's like your Buckeye fever over here in the tent.
It's a
contagion spreads. Mainly that is driven by the fact that we have such a high population there. I mean, everybody keeps chickens or ducks or, you know, geese, whatever. And, you know, as we get an increase of that.
And that's really part of the big advancements that we've seen, the progression of being able to take better care of these animals in the commercial industry. In the commercial industry, we used to grow birds outside.
Absolutely, I remember.
Right? And then we started noticing, okay, if we bring them inside, we will have a better chance of keeping those diseases out, having a better chance of protecting them from the elements, and having better health in general. So... In the commercial industry, we view this as progression from being outside into the inside controlled environmental houses. But right now we have that challenge, which is bringing more and more birds outside again, giving the chance for these infections to get into the population.
Well, you heard Katie and I talking some about the same pressure coming not just from the consumer side,
Public
the welfare and rights side of things. and they're really what the consumer thinks they're solving in their mind, this welfare or a rights issue, frankly, puts more of a health threat on the critter than they really do realize.
Right, right. And, you know, United States is all about choices, and these are
Absolutely.
All choices that are available for the people. And I think our role here is to educate and give the public the information necessary to make those decisions before they actually go ahead and make them.
Yeah, so you heard me try to set Katie up for for that thing. What I was waiting for the opportunity to do was scream consumer sovereignty.
Okay.
Consumers are always right. You give them what they what they want, or
all for that.
Don't be in the business. Well, yeah, that's true, but at the same time, if part of what they want is a better life or whatever for these critters that we eat and do other things with, you know, we do have the challenge in the industry, and you guys in the veterinary area have a particular challenge because you deal with it on so many different levels, have a challenge to educate that public a little differently, but not from a defensive nature. And that really gets to be tough for folks in the industry. We've worked on that forever.
Yeah, well, at least that's what we'll try to do, and educate and provide information, and you know, and the risks are not only limited for bird health, it is also for human health.
Right.
So having more contact with animals, certainly, you know, it is a privilege, but it certainly comes with health risk for humans as well. And you know, the Easter chicks and the salmonella outbreaks and little kids and all that stuff. So from the public health point of view, it is important to let the public know that there are risks with the decisions that they are taking.
But in America, we are a risk-free society, says the cynical old Stan. Okay.
Right.
With that, hey, let's see if we have some questions for Mo. Yes, ma'am. Can I get you to come to the microphone, please? Because I'm hard of hearing and Mo's hard of listening. No, I'm sorry.
First of all, thank you for your lecture. I came late, but it's okay. In Egypt, we expected some, maybe we can see some cases start from November, December, and so in the winter season. This is also expected here in America in the winter season. This is my first. The second, you talk about the education. The big problem is the education first of all for the public, for the not only for the worker or contact with the poultry or something. It is for the public. So the education, we try first the education, then for the people who is involved with this, in the factory or in the farms.
Okay, so I'm trying to pull from that, and you probably caught more of it. But number one, is there a seasonal component, a weather seasonal component to this? And, on the plant side of things, we talk about frost and those types of things killing off certain diseases. Do we have that at all with this kind
Absolutely.
Of a flu?
Absolutely. Similar to human influenza, avian influenza thrives in the colder winter time. It is much clearer to see these seasonal variations when we have an endemic infection. Endemic infection means that we have the infection and we live with it for years and years, so the infection is local to the area,
right.
And that's the case in Egypt. We have the H5N1, which
okay.
actually more of a public health concern compared to the strain that we have here. Definitely we can see that seasonal variation. We don't really observe that when it comes to this particular outbreak in the United
right.
States, because we didn't have multiple seasons. It was just coming into the winter, and by late spring it was out. So there is definitely a seasonal component to it. We just didn't see it here.
Okay. Other questions for Mo? Well, you got off easy. I expected the back row back there to come up with some tough ones for this
guy. Yeah, they're here to challenge me.
They've been too nice. All right. With that, hey, Mo, thanks for doing a couple days out here. And you can go try to eradicate that Buckeye fever, but I don't think you can do it. I don't care how good you are. Buckeye fever has obviously spread on these grounds again. I got it yesterday. Gee whiz.
All right.
All right. We're going to let Mo go away.